going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here
to analyze the game they love
for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for pressing play on another edition of another Dolphins podcast. This is it, our final show before the 2025 NFL draft. And Josh, we are not feeling too optimistic. I'll start by saying that Chris Greer met with the media last week, his final press conference ahead of the draft. So we're going to talk about the direction of the Miami Dolphins. And before we get too deep here, I just want to mention that Eric Smith, 5 Reasons sports contributor, will be joining us later in this show to discuss the offensive line. So stay tuned for that. But Joshua Houts, news broke early last week that 5-time Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Ramsey and the Miami Dolphins were exploring a divorce, that these two sides were going to be splitting ways. Chris Greer, who did not meet at the combine, he usually talks with the press during the combine, was not there. So he met with the media last week. And gosh, I got to say, man, are the Dolphins headed for disaster? Like, this is the earliest in the season. Like, we are optimistic homers through and through. But we're sitting here on April 22nd, and I'm saying, are we doomed?
Yeah, and I mean, we sat through Joe Philbin and Adam Gase. I mean, some of the horrendous coaches that we've had to deal with in some of those seasons, you know, where we're probably wrongly optimistic. I mean, yeah, man, it feels like this thing is an absolute disaster. And just listening to our GM, right? This is the guy that's supposed to be like, you know, I don't want to say the head of your franchise, the guy that's supposed to, you know, build things and make everything right. But it just feels like he doesn't even know what he's doing. So, yes, man, it is sitting here. We are doing this 2 days before the draft, and it just feels like all hope is lost. But it's us. I mean, we're the Dolphins, right? It would take a Will Johnson falling to 13 and then them drafting someone on day two that just gets us right back in it.
My huge issue here, The Dolphins have these glaring roster needs. And Josh, I think one thing we spoke about all throughout this offseason was we knew what Chris Greer's MO was, right? He's been with this franchise for like a decade. That was supposed to be the one saving grace about someone like Chris Greer. He's been on the job for so long. The Dolphins were always in the running for any type of traded player, even if they didn't get him. And we kind of credited Chris Greer as somebody who just knows how to get to every table. We kind of thought that there was this huge plan in place, but man, listening to this guy talk, listen to someone who their entire job is to set this team up for the future, to prepare them for departures, all the different roster changes that are going to happen year in and year out. All of a sudden, the guy who is supposed to have this long-term vision for the plan is coming out during his draft press conference saying, we need players that can win now. That, to me, man, already screams disaster. I was just very curious to get your thoughts on how you felt Chris Greer handled this press conference, because he's supposed to have the foresight. Like, Josh, who did the Miami Dolphins draft last year? Well, we're taking Chop Robinson in the first round, despite having Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, and Shaq Barrett, because we're building for the future. Obviously, Chop Robinson was a good pick, and he had to be impactful as a rookie, but the idea was we're building for the future. That continued in the second round with Patrick Paul. The year before, they drafted Cam Smith in the second round. The whole idea with Chris Greer was building for the future. How much does it hurt the franchise, a franchise that already hasn't won a playoff game in 25 years? How much does it hurt you when all of a sudden this guy whose entire decade long of experience was we're planning for the future is all of a sudden saying, I got to throw all that out the window and go draft players who are going to help us win tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because I do feel like just a few years ago, you know, we're sitting there, we're feeling optimistic. You know, we're posting things on Twitter with how young the Dolphins roster is, right? We're building everything the right way. And now, somehow we have the oldest, vet on the roster, and you have all these different pieces coming in where you're relying on Teron Armstead and some of those other guys who, they did great for us, right? But it is absolutely frustrating that we're sitting here and we're wondering, what is next? And the fact that we do have to rely on these guys, he's coming straight out and saying, we have to draft 2-3 players that are going to have to come and start right away. I mean, we've been around long enough, Jake. We know that that's not how this works. If you threw Cam Smith's ass out there, I mean, we've seen it. You throw him out there now, I don't know that we're very confident in him. And that's been after years of, having different systems, but he's had NFL experience. So I am very queasy that he's now saying, okay, all this is out the window. We're signing these guys to one-year deals, so they clearly do not have any plans for the future, right? They're going into this year as, this is our one last chance. And now you're bringing in rookies who you're saying, regardless of what it is, they have to start. And worst of all, you're sitting there telling the entire world what your weaknesses are. That also pissed me off a little bit. He's admitting, they asked him, defensive tackles you drafted, corners. And he even openly admits, those are our players of needs. One of those should be, fall to us at 13. We're confident, yada, yada. It's all baffling, Jake. And it makes me upset. I didn't think we were going to have to listen to Chris Greer at all heading into the draft. And then he comes up with his baseball cap and his freaking white goatee. And it was a train wreck.
Did him talking make things worse, you think?
I mean, it made my confidence. Yes, it made my confidence. I feel a lot more. We love using the word queasy. I feel a lot worse now than I did before. And maybe I ignorantly was hopelessly optimistic before. Maybe it's my fault.
So the Dolphins entered the 2024 season as the oldest defense in the NFL. Calais Campbell, Jalen Ramsey. I mean, they had some old dudes on that defense. Poyer would have brought the average down all by himself. If you're purging this group and you understand it's a full reset, and you only spent money this year, what is Stephen Ross's end goal here? If you understand we need to hit reset and you do sign all these guys in free agency, Tyrell Dodson and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine got 2-year deals from the Dolphins. James Daniels got 3. Those are the only 3 players, Josh, that the Dolphins signed for more than 1 year. How is this a good long-term strategy for the Dolphins? And on top of that, if Stephen Ross didn't trust these guys to say, this is your final chance, how is hamstringing them making it more likely that they can succeed? Why the thought process here just is so hard to understand from Stephen Ross, who says this is your guy's final chance, but you got to reset everything already. Wouldn't you just want somebody new in the building doing all this?
I mean, you would think so, right? But I mean, you're sitting here saying it, and I'm just like, why would you run a business that way? Why would you run anything that way? And it's just, that's so Dolphins, right? This is what we have been accustomed to. I mean, it seems like Stephen Ross has, found some type of relationship with Chris Greer that he just cannot overlook. And I mean, I feel like he trusts him to, maybe somehow get rid of these players who are unhappy, you know, try to bring in guys that can start in their place and keep this thing afloat through a soft rebuild, which, I mean, you can't sit here and lose Calais Campbell. You can't sit here and lose Teron Armstead. You can't have Jalen Ramsey and Tyreek Hill saying they went out and then saying you're not, like, in a way, rebuilding, right? Those are the pieces that you brought in here to shift this thing. And I think, you know, what we're talking through is that's the thing that's so – it makes me so sad or just so upset is the fact that you brought in all these guys. You traded for Bradley Chubb. You traded for Tyreek Hill. You signed Teron Armstead, Calais Campbell. You brought in all these pieces to win what? Nothing. We still do not have a damn playoff win for 20 years. It's absolutely frustrating. So that was my long-winded way of saying I don't know what Stephen Ross is thinking. If it were me, if it were you, I think we would have probably nuked things back with Brian Flores, right? We would have restarted at that point. If you're getting rid of Flores, get rid of Greer, start the whole thing over. But I mean, I look at this. Is it Mike McDaniel's fault? I don't feel like you can point the finger and say it is, but Kat on the previous episode we did, you know, mentioned these great players, these vets not wanting to play here. I mean, what is different here than elsewhere? And you almost think it might have something to do with coaching, but I'm spiraling, man.
I don't want previous conversations to impact how you answer this one. All right, Josh, if I was to ask you, I don't, like I said, I don't want anybody else's answers, thoughts to impact how you're going to respond to this question. It's an easy question. It's an easy question. Can you name a leader on the Miami Dolphins?
Zach Sealer.
Can you name another?
It would be, everybody I just was getting ready to name would probably be the guys I just mentioned getting rid of. And the Tua, could you say Tua Tagovailoa? I don't know if you can.
I think if you're paying your quarterback $50 million a year, I think it's fair to say your quarterback's a leader. What I don't think's fair is to not say your quarterback, and instead the second name out of your mouth is Tyreek Hill. The dude who was just on a police report, the dude who was talking about quitting this team. That, I think, was the, like, I've, you know, as we read all the quotes, Josh, we both write for this team. We do this podcast. I try to not get annoyed about every little thing I read. If you have a checkbook, a total cap where you're paying people a total of $285 million in a single season, the roster you built, and you say the second name out of your mouth is Tyreek Hill for the leaders you have signed on this team? That is disgusting. What is going through your head to say that?
That's insane. It's absolutely insane. I feel like they're trying so hard to push that he's, you know, this great, because he even said, you know, Tyreek Hill's been in the building ever since, you know, this, that, and that happened. That's definitely troubling, and shame on me for not coming right out and saying too. I just was sitting here thinking, you know, is Tua considered a leader? I mean, I think he would be, but...
You thought I was trapping you. It's just how you act to questions. And I'm not trying to... It's just, you know, you're trying to think about it like, okay, this and this. You did more than Chris Greer did. He said the dude was just on a police report. It's on a leader on a team that's spiraling out of control. And my issue, man, and Tyree can show up every day. He can be great, all smiles. NFL is very hard. Even the Patriots, dude, when they had Tom Brady, right? Every year it'd be like, well, September's the extension of the preseason. They'll start 1-3, and then they'll stomp out the 3-1 Dolphins in the second week of October, and the Dolphins will lose 5 of the next 6. The Dolphins are going to have a losing streak, even if they're one of the best 12 teams in the NFL next year. And Tyreek's still going to be trying to launch himself to the moon the second that losing streak starts. Because if the Dolphins start 1-3, he's just not going to be able to digest those emotions, dude. And that to me is like the biggest fear here. It doesn't matter what you say during the off season. I think Kat said in our last show, it's all damage control. Like once you're under fire, once the clock is ticking, the 60-minute start, man, I see no way that Tyreek Hill wouldn't just jump ship at the first sign of adversity. And just say he's the second highest leader on the team. You don't think like Malik Washington is sitting there saying, I'm a better leader than this dude. Like I was out there fighting with the Jet against the Jets in week 18. Like you see the guys out there battling. Malik Washington was, I don't know what my end point was here, but I just know that Chris Greer is getting paid millions upon millions of dollars every year. And to say that some people see Tyreek as a leader, as your second leader on the team is just, it's jaw dropping, bro.
Yeah. It almost seems like they make excuses. Cause I mean, again, these are the guys they traded for. So, I mean, we all sit here and we're all upset with this, but I mean, we kind of all knew that this was potentially going to happen, right? I mean, we all knew that this was the Tyreek Hill that we kept hearing horror stories about. And to the same point, I mean, you're saying what happens when the Dolphins, like, they start a season slow or whatever, and Tyreek Hill turns into Tyreek Hill. He starts wanting to get traded elsewhere. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, I mean, he's been, for the most part, he's been quiet, right? There was, like, that cryptic tweet or whatever it was, but he's been quiet. But how long, you know, the thing that made me kind of my ears perk up was he said about how they would deal with the whole Jalen Ramsey situation. Like, if he's on the team, we'll deal with it then. But how can he even return, right? I see no way in which he returns. And then if he does, then you have that boiling pot, just like a Tyreek Hill situation, where once they realize the Dolphins, maybe their season's out of reach, then they, you know, turn into those divas that we become accustomed to. And then the entire thing falls apart, right? Then not even Anthony Weaver midseason hiring can get this thing back in control. But it's just, it's not what I wanted to hear from a general manager. What, 10 days before the draft? Absolutely not.
So we've been doing this for about 10 minutes, Josh. I think that, like, I'm very frustrated with this team. Like, I'm very annoyed. You don't give Tyreek Hill the guaranteed money. Like, we did a bunch of podcasts about this, and they did it, and we just said, sure, cool, because we literally cannot do anything else, right? Like,
100%.
We're just sitting here on a podcast, right? We have no say over this shit. Jalen Ramsey, guaranteed money, makes no sense. But if you see this coming, if you start 2024 as the oldest roster in the books, and you say that no matter what happens this year, next year we have to evolve, knowing that Jalen Ramsey's cap hit is going to balloon the second you trade him, like, that's just, the entire process is bothering me. But sorry, to reel back in. So Jalen Ramsey, he's been in Miami in 2 years. And Josh, you remember his gripes at the end of the Vic Fangio experience, right? What was kind of the idea that why Jalen Ramsey was unhappy with Vic Fangio, right?
I can't remember. Do you remember? He didn't want to be stuck on one side of the defense, right? He wanted to kind of follow around the wide receiver one and be more of that shutdown corner that we all thought he was. And I think Vic Fangio kind of kept him in that one side, and it pissed him off a little bit. Am I right? Because I kind of forgot until you triggered it.
Dude, you crushed it. So I think I have the numbers here. I think 680 snaps is what he played his first year. Remember, he missed the start of the season because of the injury. 680 snaps, 600 of them came on the boundary. Anthony Weaver was using him so much more. I think Jalen Ramsey last year set a career high with 6 tackles for a loss. He had a career high 4 quarterback hits, and his 6 tackles for a loss was the most since his 2021 All-Pro season with the Rams. So Anthony Weaver was moving around more. I think he's played 80 snaps in the box, and that was the most of his career as well. Jalen Ramsey also had a nearly 20% missed tackle rate, the highest of his career. I think he had 14 missed tackles compared to 8 the previous year. And he's 30 years old. Maybe that just happens. I also think part of it was that, hey, you want to be that versatile X factor, that Swiss Army knife moving around the defense? Sure. But when you're asked to do all these different things, like, you got to be on top of your game. And this isn't me blaming Jalen Ramsey. I just think, you know, when you're being asked to do more, you know, you got to make some tackles that you maybe don't get situated for, like, different things like that. So the missed tackle rate balloons. He was still a very good lockdown corner. That week 14 against Garrett Wilson was the only time I think he allowed more than 63 yards in coverage. Very good player. But as I get thinking about this, and if the divorce with Jalen Ramsey was expected either way, you wonder if the Miami Dolphins are really just trying to simplify the back end of the defense. Like, think about it, Josh. If you have Jalen Ramsey back there, you got to use him as a Swiss Army knife. He's too good not to be used as a Swiss Army knife. And if you do have him just be that lockdown corner on one side of the football, he's going to complain about it. It's just the type of guy he is. It's the dog. Blame it whatever you want it to be. So when the Dolphins decided to move on from Jalen Ramsey, I did start to wonder, like, all right, you have Ashton Davis and Melifonwu as your two starting safeties as of right now. We heard Chris Greer say that he believes there's two starting safeties on the roster. They've combined to start 30 career games. Last year, Jordan Poyer and Javon Holland, I think, had... Jordan Poyer has started over 100 games in his career. Javon Holland was a 3-year starter. Kader Kohu and... who was the other guy in that secondary... Kader Kohu and Javon Holland each had over 30 starts. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place here, but you had Kendall Fuller and Jordan Poyer, two very established vets. And then Javon Holland, Kader Kohu, 30 starts each. That was a very experienced secondary. Believe it or not, they had a lot of experience where you could say, Jalen Ramsey, we're going to have you play this sort of role. And Kendall Fuller, because of his experience, Jordan Poyer, because of his experience, Javon Holland, because he's played in so many different defenses, we can react and adjust. But thinking about it, if Chris Greer believes that, you know, Melifonwu and Davis, two guys who have started a combined like 30 games over a combined 9 seasons of the NFL, you start to wonder, their job would be a lot harder if you have to play around Jalen Ramsey, wouldn't it? If you have this guy moving around and trying to disrupt offenses, he's also disrupting your defense. So, Josh, sorry for ranting here, but I genuinely think if we want to spin zone this, Jalen Ramsey's skill set could be like that final piece for a defense, but it can't be the foundation at the part of the career he's at. Like, the Dolphins could not afford a $25 million Swiss Army knife. What they need and what they're going to try to do, I think, get skill sets, get guys who can play and say, we're going to give you so much support up front. We're going to rush the passer. We're going to keep it real basic on the back end and just let you guys get comfortable in the NFL. I think that's really what the thought process started to be with Jalen Ramsey. Maybe a little more than like him not wanting to be part of the defense, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, that makes entirely a lot of sense. And I think that might be how they approach this thing. I mean, for me, I just wonder, you know, we brought him in here. And remember that word we kept using? Wasn't he supposed to be like the solar system to the defense kind of? And yeah, everything was supposed to – I mean, I feel like it just never quite got there. So if you're Jalen Ramsey, you just got traded to the Dolphins and you see what they've done these last 2 years, I mean, I guess I really can't blame him for wanting out, right? I mean, if that's the case. I mean, you came here, you were supposed to be that a difference maker, the guy that kind of set this thing over, got us to the promised land. It didn't work out. Now you sit here and you see maybe another rebuild coming along, you want to go elsewhere. So I don't blame him for that. I do like what you're saying, though, or I understand what you're saying, the fact that you got Melifonwu out there, you got Ashton Davis. Those guys need as many reps as they can. They need to get this defense underneath them. You really can't have a Jalen Ramsey, you know, coming in, moving all over the place to kind of disrupt things, although it would have been a lot nicer to have him, you know, want to be a part of this, right? But I guess it's just the way when you have these big playmakers. I mean, again, just like Tyreek Hill, you knew how Jalen Ramsey was. We sat here and say, you know, he's so nice and he's, you know, so much different than the Jalen Ramsey we once knew. I mean, apparently behind the scenes, there's still a little bit of that, you know, diva, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And trying to manage all those different personalities has always never been one of Miami's strong suits. That's my way of trying to talk it down. The idea of like, hey, if you have Davis and Melifonwu back there, you want them to just be safeties. You don't want them to have to, you know, spring over to the side to cover a wide receiver sprinting deep or anything like that. I think they're going to try to keep things real simple. Maybe you get a little Will Johnson on the one cornerback side to kind of simplify it. Have the two safeties deep. Maybe you have like these defined roles where if they blitz, it's very simplified. That's kind of my hope, man. Did you have any final thoughts about the Chris Greer press or anything else you wanted to get off your chest? Because, I mean, this does feel like, I wouldn't go as far to say like losing to Urban Meyer in London, but like this does kind of feel like, I don't know, Geno Smith trucking Danelle Ellerbe to like walk into the end zone in week 17 or 16 to keep Miami out of the playoffs when they're like 8-8 and need to win one more game to get in. It kind of feels like that, where it's just like, hey, we thought we had some sort of plan, like the Dolphins are going to make this work, and then it's like, nope, we're going to put another hand behind our back that we don't have.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I think that really stood out to me was the fact that Chris Greer kind of almost hinted at a Jalen Ramsey trade maybe going down on draft night. I think he mentioned how they talked to some teams. He kind of said, you know, how if it happens on draft night, it'll happen. And if it doesn't, then we'll deal with it then. So there was just the way he worded things and had me thinking, you know, okay, so they might wait for someone to call. And, you know, whether it's a trade up, whether it's, you know, a player's on the board who they really like. If a team comes calling, then you can get rid of Jalen Ramsey. I think we talked to him in a previous pod, you know, it's probably going to be a third or fourth round pick, but he doesn't want to be here, man. So you got to go. You got to let him go. And you just got to sink or swim with the guys on the roster. Again, the Cam Smith thing absolutely took me by surprise. You know, this guy just needs to go out there and play. I did like how he said Liam Eikenberg wasn't going to be given a starting job. But overall, man, it just felt like damage control and just Chris Greer basically laying all the chips on the table. I mean, if you're a team, one of those other 31 teams, you kind of have an idea what the Dolphins need in the draft. And based on what Chris Greer is telling you, you kind of have an idea where they're going to go. So all that to say, Jake, drafts on the horizon. Do you have that one player in mind who the Dolphins are going to take at 13? I think we can all agree. Will Johnson's, you know, I'd love Tyler Warren still, but I feel like now with this Jalen Ramsey stuff, like, let's stop screwing around, man. It has to be Will Johnson.
If you trade Tyreek Hill, bring me Tyler Warren. The more I hear about Tyler Warren, he doesn't have to be, but he's best served as like the featured piece of your offense. But the Dolphins also have Waddle. Hey, sorry to jump around, dude, but we don't we don't, you know, aren't tweeting in the same timelines or like, I'm not on Blue Sky too much. So like, we don't really have the chance to get like each other's just like off the cuff thoughts. What are your thoughts on Liam Eichenberg? Because that's one, like, I get like he stunk and he's listed as a starter right now, but I have no gripes on him getting paid $1 million. And I do think he's going to end up being the seventh or eighth guy on this offensive line. That's one of the things where Chris Greer, I think Mike McDaniel's the same way. It's like, he's going to be he's going to fight for a job. I think you're A-okay to have Liam Eichenberg back in that role. Do you see him being more than that? Is it tongue in cheek from Chris Greer at all?
No, I think I agree with him. I do think they have confidence in him that he can go out there and start, and that's why he's here, right? I feel like, again, he always felt like that Jesse Davis type. He'd be much better as that sixth or seventh guy. So the fact that they got him here, relatively cheap, I'm 100% for that. I just would hate to see him start, you know, half the season again. I mean, I feel like you need to find a better upgrade there at guard, but I feel like you bring in a guy like Liam, some of these other options, they might actually feel okay with that. So that's the only part of that I'm queasy about, but I have no problem bringing Liam back for that price. And, you know, the fact that he is that guy just gets underneath there and nitpicks and, you know, pisses off the other team. You got to love when you hear those stories.
Faster 15 yards than Tyreek Hill. Speaking of Josh, one other thing I wanted to talk about, like, people were getting all over Mike McDaniel for saying that, Mike McDaniel was asked if he wanted Tyreek Hill to be a team captain next year. And people took this so out of context, and I feel so bad for Mike McDaniel because of his word salad. He was like, I would love to see Tyreek Hill become a team captain. And people just took that and ran with it. What it actually is, and I am, you know, I don't have it right in front of me, but he said that I would love to see Tyreek Hill as a team captain because captains are voted on by your teammates, because it would show that everybody else bought in and saw that he wasn't doing the same BS that he used to be doing. That's one thing I also just wanted to bring up too, because I saw people running with that, and like, Mike McDaniel is very frustrating. He's very dumb when it comes to challenge flags. But outside of that, I do think he's genuinely a smart person and he knows how to talk to people. I honestly thought that was a good quote to say, like, hey, I'd love to see him be a captain, because it just shows, hey, his teammates are believing in him, that he did enough to have people buy in. And I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, that might be part of the reason why you hear Chris Greer also bringing up the whole Tyreek Hill's a captain, just because, you know, again, it was voted on by his peers. So just because we have this, at least myself, at least just because I have this opinion of him doesn't mean it's necessarily who he is. But you gave Mike McDaniel some credit. I want to give Chris Greer a little bit of credit, because I don't know if this is one of the parts of the press that I thought was a good answer. He was asked, you know, I think, why didn't you restructure Tua Tagovailoa's contract to sign some of these bigger high-priced guys at tackle and things like that? And he was like, we didn't feel the need to touch that at this point. So for me, I mean, we all love Tua Tagovailoa. He's the quarterback, right? He's been our guy. Oh, yeah, I guess not everybody does. But most of us love Tua Tagovailoa. We like what he does for the Miami Dolphins. We can agree he's probably the best quarterback since Dan Marino. But there's those injuries that continue to weigh on the back of your head. So for Chris Greer to be okay, and again, maybe it's not the foresight that I think it is, but for the fact that the Dolphins are going into this year, see what their quarterback can do, see if he can stay healthy, see if he can play and not have some random-ass hip injury with the playoffs on the line, should go a long way, and then they can make a decision at the end of this year. So there was a lot of bad from that press conference, but that was that one little thing. I was like, okay, I agree with you on that one, Chris Greer. You win that round.
Is there, and you can't say this is clickbait. You can't say this because we are what, Josh? We're like 20 minutes into this conversation. Do you think there's some infighting here? Because I mean, think about Mike McDaniel. I love Tua. You know, he's the quarterback I can win with. Like, it's been like all positive PR, and then you have Greer saying Tua knows he needs to stay healthy. He's not mentioning him when he mentions Zach Sealer, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and I think he mentioned one other guy. He didn't mention Tua as a captain. Do you think there's something going on here where, would you be surprised if starting next season, Chris Greer is your general manager and Mike McDaniel's not your head coach?
This is what they're setting up for, isn't it? Because there was something he said during his press conference too, where he was like, in years past, I kind of deferred to the coaches or something when it came to drafting players. And it just seems like, you know, he's laying the breadcrumbs, man. So, God, why'd you have to say that? That is absolutely what's going to happen. It's going to be Mike McDaniel's fault. They're going to end up, oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, I could see there being some infighting. I hope they get it together. And maybe that's what some of these players see, right? Maybe they see the ship sinking, and that's why, you know, Campbell, I understand why he wanted to go, and Armstead, his body couldn't do it much. So maybe those are unfair situations, but you got me queasy, man. That's exactly what's going to happen. Don't let Chris Greer pick another head coach. Don't do it. Or a quarterback.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And like people, you know, I think people go over the top when they talk about culture. Like, you know, we need to have this hard-nosed culture. What you need is you need 53 players plus however many coaches just to be walking in the same direction. And that's the issue when you're trading a first-round pick for Bradley Chubb. You're trading first-round picks for, Tyreek Hill. You bring in Jalen Ramsey. Like, you have guys who have successfully found the path to success. It doesn't mean it's going to be your path to success. Like, you have different guys who are trying to figure out different things. Like, and you do wonder just the roster construction, man, just total mess, total mess. You go back to 2020. I think they had 5 first round picks over 2 years. I think it was because of the, oh man, it's just,
you talk about guys walking in the same direction in the culture. I mean, there was, and that's what's so frustrating, right? They had some players that felt like those guys, the culture guys, the guys that have been here, you know, forged by combat type thing, and they let those guys go to trade and pay somebody else's players. The roster construction is baffling, especially when, again, we're sitting here, you mentioned on the previous pod, man, all the players they tried to bring in to do that cornerback unit, we're sitting here saying they need to get somebody. I mean, it's crazy. Chris Greer, you gotta go, man.
Sorry we've jumped around a little bit here, Josh. One more final question. What, everyone's talking. It's so true. So people are bringing it up, you know, Jalen Ramsey, let's get a 3rd round pick. Tyreek Hill, I don't know, maybe we could get a 3rd or 4th round pick. That'd be fine and dandy, but I'm still kind of thinking, like, what if you could trade Tyreek Hill to move up to 8 with the Panthers? Like, I'm wondering if these guys, it's not as simple as you can trade up, but maybe just move around a little bit. I think that would be something, like, if Chris Greer, you want to show, like, you've been here for 10 years, you can make this work. We saw what you did in 2021, even though you passed on Penei Sewell and Jamar Chase. Like, you jumped around to get an extra first and then come back up to get Jalen Waddle. I think that I wanted to send out as my final, like, maybe Chris Greer is going to use these guys a little differently than we originally thought.
Now, Wills, I mean, I'm sitting here saying I'll give up his entire draft plan, but he did say, you know, we will have no issues trading back, and then if there's a player we like, we'll trade up. So, Jake, maybe you're onto something. Maybe they could package them both, right, and get Travis Hunter. Couldn't he fill up, he'll be a cornerback and a receiver. He can get rid of Jalen Ramsey and Tyreek Hill. Just make it happen. We've got our quarterback receiver out of one guy and kind of compress him into one or something. But, yeah, man, I could see that. I'd be okay with that. I'd feel more confident if they were like, okay, we want this cornerback, you know, or we want this player. Let's trade this disgruntled player along with pick X, Y, and Z and make it happen. I feel like you have to at this point. I mean, we're talking about Chris Greer and this being their year, Mike McDaniel as well. I mean, you guys got to empty the chamber. You can't just keep drafting these Cam Smiths that Eric Hezukamas. I mean, you mentioned him saying he's more of a Malik Washington being more of a leader than Tyreek Hill. Eric Hezukamas got to be up there too.
But that is it. That is all we have, Josh. For I'd say this is some copium. I know the Dolphins like kind of feel like, I think it was Mike Florio said, the Dolphins are right about to be a slow motion train wreck. I think a little copium here, but we're about to talk offensive line with Eric Smith. So let's get negative. Stay tuned. And welcome back to another Dolphins podcast. Joining us now, Five Reasons Sports contributor and offensive line guru, Coach Eric Smith. Coach, it's always nice to see you, my friend. How you doing today?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, guys. Always a pleasure to be on here talking with you guys. Looking forward to talking some more offensive line stuff, talking some more draft stuff, and, you know, eventually getting to the draft here in a couple of days.
We put you in kind of a tough spot here because in the first half of this podcast, we were kind of on our soapbox talking about Chris Greer's press conference last week and just kind of the struggles of the frustrations in terms of lack of direction. I just want to get your thoughts before we get into this. How do you feel about the direction of the Miami Dolphins currently?
I mean, I don't think anybody feels great about where the Dolphins are right now. But I think it's somewhat predictable. I mean, they obviously try to do the Rams F those picks strategy, and that didn't work out. But that, to me, doesn't mean that you trash the entire process. You know, we're entering into a new phase here. We're no longer on that rookie quarterback contract where you can afford to go out and get those expensive free agents. And we're transitioning into a period of, you know, where you have to depend on those draft picks. We saw the Rams go through it. We saw the Chiefs go through it with the way they retooled their defense. And that's kind of where the Dolphins are. And obviously the Rams and Chiefs had more success on the front end of it than what the Dolphins have so far. But I think that where we are is, you know, kind of predictable in the life cycle of building a team. And we'll just have to see how it plays out as far as the draft picks.
Now you told us how you feel about the entire, you know, grand scheme of things after the Chris Greer press conference. What is your thought process heading into this draft class with the offensive line? Because before we talk to you, you know, we're heading into free agency. We got James Daniels here, brought back Liam Eikenberg, Teron Armstead, rode off into the sunset. What is your pulse? How do you feel about that offensive line as it sits right now before draft night?
I probably feel better than most people do. And my reason for that is that, you know, we're going into the draft and we have 4 out of 5 starters set. Like, I know that some people are concerned about Patrick Paul, but I'm not one of them. And Chris Greer made it very clear that he is the left tackle. So, you know, you're going into the draft. You got Patrick Paul and Jackson on the bookends. You got Brewer at center, obviously. James Daniels, one of the guards. So most teams going into the draft and saying that you have one spot to fill are going to, you know, feel okay about where they are. I think that Dolphins fans are a little scarred by the offensive line play that we've had over the last few years. So I get it. But at the same time, coming into the draft, you know, I'm not the got to draft a guard at 13 guy. You know, I think there's not great options on the roster today, but there are more critical positions on the roster that need to be upgraded than the offensive line. You know, if they can find that mid-round guard or somebody can come in and compete, or you turn around after the draft in that third wave of free agency and bring in a Will Hernandez or something like that, you know, I still think there's paths for the offensive line to still get better, but I don't feel like it's a complete disaster today and that we have to go out and use pick 13 to fix it.
So the Dolphins have 10 overall picks in the draft, 3 in the first 3 days, though. A lot of their picks, day 3, a couple fifth rounders, a couple seventh rounders. The one thing that I always try to keep in the back of my mind is the third round pick we should really look at that as a fourth rounder. It's one of the compensatory picks. It's at the end of the round. Where would you get to the point where, let's say, you know, there's been some unfortunate Will Johnson news recently about a long-term injury or knee issues, and he's been one of our, you know, main guys throughout this entire draft process. We'd like the Dolphins to draft Will Johnson, but let's just say they go defense in the first round. Say they go defensive tackle in the second. Do you feel with that third round pick, if they don't get a lineman there, you're going to start feeling, dare I say, a little queasy just with the lack of talent, day one starters that may be available at that point?
I wouldn't say queasy. I'd rather go another direction at pick 98 than to try to reach for somebody else. And there are players that I absolutely like at 98, like Miles Frazier is the one that continually comes up for me that, you know, his mocks seem to be a little all over the place. Sometimes he's there at 98. Sometimes I've seen him at, you know, our 116 pick. But if we got to 98 and, you know, somebody like a Miles Frazier, you know, was there, I would be comfortable with that. But, you know, I wouldn't go – and, I mean, let's use Tate Ratledge, for example, as a player that I'm not as high on. You know, if we get to 98 and Miles Frazier's off the board and Tate Ratledge is there, like, I'm not going to be sitting here pounding the table saying, hey, we have to draft a guard at 98. There are – if the right guard is not there, then I would still prefer – even if we got a defensive lineman at 48, if the right guy, let's say CJ West – is there at 98, then that is probably the direction that I would go versus reaching on an offensive lineman.
It sounds like you feel, I don't want to say, you know, optimistic, but it sounds like you are, you know, you feel pretty good about what we have here, and you're not trying to make any, you're not trying to reach. And, you know, let's hope Chris Greer follows suit with that. But you're talking about some of the mid-round guys, and we'll get more into that. But how do you see the front of this draft class shaping out? We know that a lot of people have Armand Membo up there, Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks Jr. How do you have these guys you know, how are they ranked among your offensive line rankings? And is there one of these guys who you feel is best suited, you know, if the Dolphins were to take a guy at 13? We know that, like you mentioned, Patrick Paul, Austin Jackson on the outside, that would be best suited to slip inside and play guard. Is there one of these guys that stands out to you? And then what's your top three?
I'll start off with the top three part of it. And the top three for me would be Simmons, Banks, and Campbell. I think that Will Campbell is a early all pro at guard. I think he can play tackle, but I think he's more of a average offensive tackle. Whereas, you know, if he goes in and he plays guard, I could see him being a pro bowler from, you know, basically day one. Josh Simmons is a top tackle that I have on my board. And then Banks is number two for me. And both of those are players that I feel, I wouldn't draft anybody at 13 that I was projecting to play guard from day one. If I were drafting a offensive lineman at 13, it would be a tackle that I expected to compete with Austin Jackson for the right tackle spot. And I would give consideration to, you know, if the rookie beats out Jackson, to moving Jackson into guard. Those are my top three. I am lower on Membow than a lot of people are. And a lot of that comes down to first impressions. Like, my process when I watch any prospect, I try to avoid the highlight videos and all that stuff. And I'll go to a player's schedule and I'll find, you know, the toughest competition. Like, I don't care how you're doing beating up on a, you know, lower level school. So for Membow, when I went, the first game that I looked at was Alabama. And the first half of Alabama for Membow was really, really ugly. Like, I had a fourth round grade on him after watching that. And then I watched some other ones. I saw how he did at the combine. Like, he's an athletic freak. And I bumped him up some. And I got to the point where I was kind of like, am I overthinking that Alabama game? So I went back and found the next game, and that was Texas A&M for me, you know, going out there against Shamar Stewart and Shamar Turner, and that was another ugly game for him. So I have concerns with Membow in top 15, and I know that that goes against a lot of what people are saying. Somebody will take a chance on him in the top 10. Some offensive line coach is going to see him and say, you know, he's got all of these tools. I think I can mold him into a all pro. But for me, drafting in the top 10, 15 picks, I'm not looking for a project that I feel like Membow is. I have, like I said, Campbell, Simmons, Banks, Connerly I have above Membow. Again, just I feel like he's more of a day one ready player. And then some guards I like at the top there. Again, not even in the discussion for 13, but you know, if we start creeping towards, you know, 40 and either Tyler Booker or Donovan Jackson are on the board, you know, I feel like those guys are a good bit ahead, and Zabel. I'd put Zabel in that bucket as well. That those are players that I feel, you know, there's a bit of a drop off after them, and I would consider trading up to around 40 if some of those guys are still on the board.
I don't want to go overboard with just the Madden logic here, but I've seen Gray Zabel, somebody who I think in mock drafts about 2 months ago, everyone was like, I'm a genius. I got him in the third round. No problem. And it kind of had that, who's the guy on the Raiders now that the center, Jackson Powers Johnson. I think he would kind of fit the same boat where we were like, let's get him in the second round. And then everyone was like, slow down a little bit. He's going to go a lot higher than a lot of people think here. I've seen Zabel mocked to the Dolphins at 13. I wanted to get your reaction on that because I'm starting to, and people say trade down, but you need two teams to trade down. I've heard the Broncos is one team that's been sniffing around moving up 10 picks. What would you think about Zabel at 13? And if it was a possibility, where would you rank Zabel at pick 20 if you could get a third round pick or something in terms of the best options for the Dolphins?
Yeah, so, in the first round? I mean, I really like Gray Zabel as a player. You know, I've had a second round grade on him from early in the process. I compare him a lot to who was the guy out of Duke last year, Graham Barton, right? A lot of similarities there in terms of a player that played tackle in college, but has five position versatility in the NFL. And I mean, even with Barton playing against better competition, was a, you know, late first round, early second round type pick. This draft is not as strong as what last year's was, but I would have Zabel as a second round pick. So to get him at 13, I feel would be a reach. You know, if that's a player that they decide they have questions about the other guys, they decide that, you know, maybe Gray Zabel, you know, the scenario that I would like most when it comes to Zabel, you know, premium positions on the offensive line are tackles and centers. Guards are not considered that way, right? So if you told me that you were going to trade down to pick 20 and you were going to draft Gray Zabel to play guard tomorrow, but that the vision is that, you know, as Brewer gets older, Zabel would transition to center the way that a Cam Jurgens did for the Eagles, then that would be an explanation that I would really, you know, be intrigued with, but again, not at 13. I like Zabel a lot. I have a round two pick on him, but I can understand, you know, if that round two pick you pick in the 20s and be happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good. I want to get your thoughts on, say Chris Greer came to you and, you know, okay, day two, they're giving you a draft pick. Which one of these guys do you think is the best fit for the Miami Dolphins? Could come in here, play guard, you know, which of those guys really would you bang the table for that, you know, is maybe your guy and that you feel like come in? It could be a few guys, but who are some of those later guys that, you know, on day two that we should start thinking, okay, if we draft them, they can come in, compete with Liam Eichenberg, and hopefully be the guard of this future?
Yeah, so I would say that outside of the guys that we've already talked about, Jonah Savanaya at 48, if he is there, is a guy that I would have absolutely no issues drafting. I feel like he is a day one starter at guard and a player that can, you know, kick out the tackle in an emergency as well. Miles Frazier is another player that I feel is day one ready. Maybe not the ceiling of some of the other guys, but I think that he's a player that can come in and compete right away. Marcus Embau is another one that, you know, I have a few more questions with him in terms of his ability to step in day one. But, you know, kind of along the Membau route, like this is a guy that, you know, athleticism is off the charts. You know, Embau would be a player that I could easily see that you draft him, you know, maybe isn't a day one starter because he's still learning. But maybe you get halfway through the season, you get an injury somewhere along the line and Embau gets into the lineup and never gives it back. So I could see that type of thing. And then there, you know, there's a couple of guys we get into day three that I feel are dropping for different reasons. Like a Joshua Gray is a player that I like. And, you know, if he wasn't, I don't even know how old he is, but I know he's been in college, you know, forever. I think 6 or 7 years in college now. You know, if he was coming out as a 21, 22 year old, is probably a day two type pick. So that would be a guy that I would be interested in on day three, that I think could not come in and, you know, hand him the job, but that's a guy that I think could come in and compete for that open guard spot. And I would say, you know, similar for Kansas, Bryce Cabledew is a player that was playing tackle, moved into guard. I think that was when Logan Brown came to Kansas. So, you know, a little bit newer to the guard position, but has that multiple position flexibility. Another player, you know, when it comes to Cabledew, I have a lot of the same notes on him as I do for Savanaya, but obviously, you know, a notch below, but a player that has a lot of the same traits that I like, and a player that, again, not going to, you know, when his name's called, I'm not going to say, hey, there's our other starting guard. But if you don't see a significant addition at guard, somebody like that could come in and be part of that competition and maybe come out on top.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Trying to jump into the head of Chris Greer here, I think it's a real unique position where a general manager's job is supposed to prepare the team for the long term. I mean, Patrick Paul last year, they drafted two guys last year that the idea was like, we're building for the future. The Dolphins have the second most draft picks. There are a couple teams with 11. They're sitting there at 10. Everyone's kind of under the impression of like, if we can trade down. And if every team is trying to trade down, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I've mentioned it a couple of times. Josh, you know, appeases me and kind of plays with this here with me, but would I be too much of a mad scientist under the impression of, if you have these 10 draft picks, trying to climb back maybe into the late first round, maybe up a little bit in the second, just to get, you know, the Dolphins, Chris Greer specifically said, we need 3 day 1 starters. You have 10 draft picks. Is it really worth getting another, I don't know, 7th round running back? I know you need more than just that 7th round pick, but do you see any way the Dolphins, with everybody saying like, this isn't a top heavy draft class, 2nd and 3rd round is where you make your money, where the Dolphins might be able to climb and get their guy for a little bit of a cheaper price? Does that sound a little too crazy for what the Dolphins are going to do with the issues they have? Or could you see maybe that being the wild card scenario we haven't talked
about? No, I could definitely see that. I mean, when you talk about those 6th and 7th round picks, like, a lot of times those are basically throwaway picks. Like, you know, if you have, what do the Dolphins have, 4 7th round picks right now? Like, you don't expect 4 7th round picks to make your 53-man roster. And if all 4 of them make it, you either have a genius for a GM or you have a pretty weak roster. Talking about trade scenarios, like, I'm not crazy about trading down from 13 because, like I said, I feel like this is a weaker draft. And I think you can still get a stud player at 13 as opposed to trading down and just getting somebody that you kind of like. But trading up is something that I am more intrigued by. And the one that I look at is trading up from 98, right? Going from pick 48 to 98 is a long way to go. And like you said, Josh, or Jake, number 98 is basically a 4th round pick, right? If we could use, you know, maybe, you know, we have the other compensatory pick, right? You got, what is it, 135, I think, is the 4th round compensatory pick. Like, could you package 98 and 135 to move up more towards the middle of that 3rd round with 98? I think they're definitely going to move around, but I'll be surprised if they end up with more than 10 draft picks, but I would not be surprised to see it more like 8, seeing them try to move up for some guys they like.
Yeah, I don't know if Jake hinted at it, but they do have some veterans, you know, some players that might want out that maybe they could package into some of these deals to move up. I think we got a pretty good grasp on, you know, what you're thinking heading into the draft. I want to get your thoughts on maybe, and I hate it to put you on the spot here, but which free agents, you know, are there still some guys? I think you mentioned Will Hernandez earlier. There's still some free agents that, you know, if you're Chris Greer, he sat here and said, you know, we need to get those day one starters, at least 3 in this draft class. But he also mentioned, you know, we signed, I think it was Calais Campbell in June. We signed some veterans that came in and contributed. are there still some guys out there that you could feel confident in coming in and, you know, again, beating out Liam Eichenberg, being that left guard next to Patrick Paul, or right guard, I guess. Is there a guy out there or guys that, you know, you would feel confident in?
Yeah, so I think that one thing that the Dolphins hit on was, you know, James Daniels, I think, could play either left or right. And I think I've talked about with this on your show, too, my vision of the two different styles of guards. I think that James Daniels fits pretty well with both of them. You know, so when you get into the post-draft stuff and you haven't found that other guard, there are still options. I wouldn't be surprised if there's been some, you know, handshake deals. You know, Will Hernandez was a name that you heard very early in the offseason that supposedly had interest in Miami and vice versa. So I would not be surprised if there's a deal on the table that's like, hey, you know, if we go through the draft and don't pick a offensive lineman on day one or two, this deal is here for you. So Hernandez would be one. I could see Brandon Scherff being another one that's like a very much a breaking case of emergency type guy, right? You know, that would be more of like the Calais Campbell style signing that is very late in the offseason that they've gone through OTAs and they're like, oh crap, like we really have more of an issue than we thought at guard. You know, let's bring in this guy to play for a year. Brunskill is another name that's been tossed around there. You know, I think that Hernandez and Scherff are more of the left guard type. Brunskill I see more as the athletic right guard type. But like I said, with James Daniels, like that leaves you flexibility both in the draft and free agency to be able to, you know, fill that other spot with the best prospect you can find, whether it's a draft pick or a free agent.
Eric, I love always listening to your analysis because you mentioned cohesion quite a bit, how important cohesion is with the offensive line. And that's part of the argument of saying, hey, Teron Armstead was awesome, but you know, if you only get him for 12 games, you're kind of hindering Patrick Paul a little bit here. Ever since they signed James Daniels, I was under the impression of left guard. And then I think it was Josh, it might have been you, pretty much everyone that's been on, but like, hold up, right guard is definitely a possibility here. Just trying to play it out here, what would make the most sense? Because you have a youngish guy in Patrick Paul at left tackle, you have a bit of a more veteran in Austin Jackson at right tackle, so would it benefit the Dolphins to put maybe the veteran like Daniels next to someone a little bit younger like Patrick Paul, where you then could have another rookie come in and you have him between Brewer and Jackson, two veterans? Or is it more of just trying to get the guys that have the right traits more than maybe just cohesion in terms of experience?
Yeah, I think that you could look at that either way. You know, I think that a lot of that depends on where the development of Patrick Paul was last year, right? And that's stuff that we don't know, right? If they feel like Patrick Paul's been picking up the playbook well and that he is developing well, right, then maybe, you know, you don't feel it's as important to have James Daniels there. I think James Daniels is a excellent leader. Like, if you, I don't know if you guys listened to the interview that Travis Wingfield had with him, but, you know, the way that he talked about his communication with the young offensive linemen in his previous offensive line rooms, like, I know that we're losing Teron Armstead and we're losing a great leader there, but James Daniels, I think, is really going to fill that void from a leadership perspective. In terms of, you know, where I would put him, some of it would depend on who the other guard ends up being. If they feel like the, you know, the rawness of Paul needed that experience beside him, then, like I said, Daniels can play the left side. But the other thing to think about is that, you know, if, you know, we're out here and we're doing, you know, offensive line camp and, you know, Senior Bowl one-on-one offensive lineman blocking, like, do you feel better with Patrick Paul blocking a defensive end one-on-one, or do you feel better with Austin Jackson blocking one-on-one, right? And I, for me, it's 100% it's Patrick Paul. So from that perspective, you know, maybe I would slide that more veteran help over to Austin Jackson's side and do a little more slide right protection to cover up Austin Jackson's holes in the passing game and let Patrick Paul, you know, use his athleticism and talent on the left side to, you know, get those one-on-one matchups.
Man, I love that analysis. And I like how you brought up his interview with Travis Wingfield, because I mean, he sounds like he's just like so well put and just level, you know, he seems like the type of guy you want to bring in here to hopefully fix this culture. I feel like we've been, you know, racking your brain about offensive linemen. I want to know your thoughts heading into the 13th pick in the 2025 NFL draft. Who do you think the Miami Dolphins should draft? Who do you think they're going to draft? And, you know, who are some of these players you really like outside of the offensive line unit? Because, I mean, you're an offensive line guru. We love listening to you talk offensive line, but there's other positions out there too. So what are your thoughts at 13, and who are some of the players you really like in this class?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, there was a time when I said that, you know, I would be fine with Kelvin Banks at number 13, and that's still true. I really like Kelvin Banks. But when we look at how free agency has played out and where the holes on the roster still exist, I feel like the defensive backfield, especially if they get that Ramsey trade, is going to be more bare than even what the other guard is. And the same thing with the interior defensive line. My ideal scenario would be a defensive back in round one and a interior defensive line in round two. As far as the specific players, you know, I had Will Campbell and Jahde Barron ranked very closely, you know, almost like a, you know, what flavor ice cream do you like type of thing, right? Obviously, Will Johnson has had the discussion about his knee and whether there's a degenerative issue there, and that's going to go a long way to determining whether or not he's even a factor. And with that in mind, like, I'm kind of not considering him. So my ideal scenario at number 13 right now would be to get Jahde Barron, who, you know, I feel in terms of play style and things that he can do matches Jalen Ramsey in a lot of ways, in terms of a player that can play on the outside, can play on the inside, can do some of that safety stuff. A lot of versatility there. If Barron was off the board and the Dolphins were not moving, then my next choice would probably be Tyler Warren. You know, I know there's talk about Colston Loveland being tight end one by some people, and I just don't agree, and I definitely don't agree with the people that say that Loveland is a better blocker than Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren, for my money, is the best outside zone blocker in this draft, and that's even above guys like Jackson Hall's. Like, take the receiving stuff out of the way, I would take Tyler Warren's blocking over any of them. And then, of course, you get the other stuff that Tyler Warren brings, not only from a receiving perspective, but you can move him around. He can be your wildcat quarterback. He can run your quarterback sneaks. Tons of value there. But for Miami specifically, you know, they didn't get enough from the tight end in terms of the run game last year. I think Tyler Warren could go a long way to doing that. And then if those two were off the board, then we get into more of a trade down scenario. But probably the next player that I would take at 13 would be Malachi Starks. You know, I think that, you know, I've made the comparison with him to the Creed Humphrey stuff from, was it 2021, where Creed Humphrey was the top center in the draft in his junior year, right? If he came out, he'd have been a first round pick, and then he stays in school for his senior year and everybody just nitpicks him to death. He falls to the second round, and now the Chiefs have a second round center that's trending towards a Hall of Fame type career. And I feel like a lot of that has happened with Malachi Starks also, that in 2023, like, this was the dude. And I feel like he had a good season in 2024 and has just been kind of picked apart. But I still think he is a very good player at safety.
Eric, you've done such a great job lifting the spirits here, bringing the positivity. I'm going to rip you right back down to end this conversation, because you bring up Starks. And the one thing I worry about where the Dolphins are, you have a GM and a coach on the hot seat. And I do want to say, Tyler Warren with McDaniel, sign me up. I would love to see what can happen there. But my biggest fear in this draft is that the Dolphins play for singles. Like, they aren't even trying to, like, hit into the gap for a double, hit a triple. Like, if you get... you know, for me specifically, it was safety in general at 13, or when Tyler Booker from Alabama, they were talking about him at guard for 13. I'm like, man, I get it. I see the talent. But at 13, like, it's a way for Chris Greer is going to sit here at the end of the year and say, hey, we had a successful draft because these guys were all okay, when you're not taking the swing that can truly impact the team. If we're sitting here later tonight and the Dolphins draft, well, I'm going to let you finish it. Who do you need to see them draft to be like, man, like, I already know the process here and what they're trying to do, and I'm just not a fan.
Yeah, I think that would be the offensive line pick, right? Whether that is Zabel or whether that is, you know, I don't see Tyler Booker going at 13, right? But if Tyler Booker was a first round pick, you know, that would be the one that kind of makes me shake my head a little bit, right? I get it, but, you know, the Chris Greer came out, 2 years ago and said that, you know, we're more worried about the offensive line than they are, right? And I got it back then. You know, I get what he's saying, even though I feel like that's been blown out of proportion to an extent. But I feel like, you know, if they were to come out and they were to draft a guard in round one, that would be kind of a, like a, you know, hey, I've been getting beat up by the fans for a few years now on the offensive line. I'm going to appease them. Here we go. Like he hasn't drafted a non-premium position in the first round his entire time that he's been here. So, you know, if you feel like you're on the hot seat and your counter to that is to just go with the safe pick and just draft a guard in round one, then that would be something I'm not a fan of.
I'm right there with you. It looks like we lost Josh here, but Eric, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure. No, we got him back here. So Josh,
I just want to, again, thank you so much for coming on here and doing this. And I guess maybe should we go around? Who's going to be the pick tonight? I mean, at this point, Kenneth Grant, I'm leaning Kenneth Grant. I kind of feel like it might be him. The Will Johnson knee thing spooked me a little bit. JD Barron, though, I think that's probably a good bet.
Yeah, for me, it would be Jade Barron or, Jade Barron or bust, right? If it's not Barron, then there's probably most scenarios where I'm looking to trade down.
There's no way that it was Chris Greer who said this about the knee with Will Johnson, just to kind of ding him a little bit. That's the thing, too. I'd love to do some sort of report someday about just like the pre-draft buzz, because it seems like, you know, we spend 3 months talking about all these guys and all their injuries, and then they're 6 months into their NFL career, and they're like, wow, how did this guy drop? He's absolutely awesome. And they never talk about the injury again. I'm not saying that will be the case, but that's my hope for Johnson, at least. I hope he stays healthy and is a good player throughout his NFL career. But Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be talking to you after the draft, and have a fun time tonight. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. My pleasure, as always.
One final time, shout out to Eric Smith for joining us. And Josh, we've done it. The draft is here. Thank you all so much for listening to another Dolphins podcast. We will be back probably, what, Josh, Friday afternoon with some reaction to the first round pick, whoever that may be. But just to make sure you know when the show is going on, make sure you subscribe, Spotify, iTunes, 560 WQAM on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us there. All right, that is it for real. Go enjoy draft night, and most importantly, fins up.
Fins up.